From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Trump before Congress, Sessions and Russia, and an epic Oscars flub. President Trump went for an uplifting tone in his address to Congress.
What we are witnessing today is the renewal of the American spirit. Our allies will find that America is once again ready to lead.
A firestorm after it emerged. Attorney General Jeff Sessions met with Russians during the campaign and denied it in his confirmation hearings. Nancy Pelosi called for his resignation.
The fact that the Attorney General, the top cop in our country, lied under oath to the American people is grounds for him to resign.
And utter confusion at the Oscars when the wrong film was awarded Best Picture. La La Land producers Mark Platt and Jordan Horowitz corrected the mistake on live TV.
This is not a joke. I'm afraid they read the wrong thing.
This is not a joke. Moonlight has won Best Picture. Moonlight, Best Picture.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Susan Page, Jeff Pagaz, and On Point news analyst Jack Beattie. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is it right? Is it enough for Jeff Sessions to recuse himself? And what did you hear in President Trump's speech this week? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Susan, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you.
Also with us from Washington is Jeff Pagaz, Justice and Homeland Security Correspondent for CBS News, author of the forthcoming book, Black and Blue, Inside the Divide Between the Police and Black America. Jeff Pagaz, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beattie joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Susan, and Jeff.
Jeff, where now does the inquiry into connections between Russia and the Trump campaign stand? Do we know for sure if there is an investigation going on in the law enforcement side of the U.S. government? Where does the congressional investigation stand?
Oh, there is an investigation from the law enforcement perspective. The FBI is looking into this with the help of several intelligence agencies. Now, at the heart of this investigation is whether there were any contacts between Trump campaign representatives and Russian operatives or officials during the course of the 2016 campaign, during which you had this wave of Russian cyber attacks against government, against Democratic Party officials. And so that's what this investigation is all about. That's the law enforcement side. But also you have both the House and Senate Intel committees looking into this as well. They are in the early stages of their investigation, but the federal law enforcement investigation is well underway. And it has been underway for several months.
But don't we know that there were contacts? I mean, that's a lot of what we heard this week. We heard now explicitly from the Attorney General of the United States that in his capacity as an advisor supporter of the Trump campaign, he did meet with the Russian ambassador. We've also seen, now this is post-campaign season after election, but also the meeting of Michael Flynn and Jared Kushner at Trump Tower in New York with the Russian ambassador. Aren't the contacts known at this point?
They are known, and a lot of that is coming out now. The question is, what was under discussion during those contacts? What were they talking about? For law enforcement, the FBI in particular, this is about building a case that you can then take to a prosecutor. For the intelligence community, this is operating on a scale of confidence from moderate to high confidence. So there are different ways of judging the progression of this investigation. But just because you have these contacts, it does not necessarily suggest that there is something that violates the law at play here. And the investigators are trying to build a case that they can take to prosecutors. So just because you have these contacts and these meetings coming out, that doesn't solve their problem, and that doesn't lead them any closer to determining who was involved here and the extent of the involvement and the extent of the contacts, and were they coordinating with the Russian officials during the campaign. That's what they're trying to figure out. And listen, this is not going to take weeks to figure this out. This is going to take months. This is a complicated and broad investigation.
the news this week that Jeff Sessions met with the Russian ambassador during a time he had said during his confirmation hearings that he had not met with Russians. That got a huge storm whipped up on Capitol Hill and beyond. Here was Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer yesterday saying that Jeff Sessions should resign because he would be incapable of impartiality in investigations of the 2016 election.
There cannot be even the scintilla of doubt about the impartiality and fairness of the Attorney General, the top law enforcement official of the land. After this, it's clear Attorney General Sessions does not meet that test.
Resignation? No. But here was the Attorney General saying he would recuse himself from investigations of the election.
I have now decided to recuse myself from any existing or future investigations of any matter relating in any way to the campaigns for President of the United States.
In his confirmation hearings, he said he should have slowed down. Here he was.
In retrospect, if I should have slowed down and said, but I did meet one Russian official a couple of times, that would be the ambassador.
But he said there's no truth to the notion that there was some kind of big coordinated plan going on here. Here he was, the Attorney General yesterday, as he recused himself.
Let me be clear. I never had meetings with Russian operatives or Russian intermediaries about the Trump campaign. And the idea that I was part of a, quote, continuing exchange of information during the campaign between Trump surrogates and intermediaries for the Russian government is totally false.
You got to listen very carefully here. Susan Page, what do you make of all this at this point? U.S. intelligence community has come out and said there was intervention in the campaign season. It was on behalf of Donald Trump. Now we have this drip of news coming out about meetings that were either not disclosed earlier or were actively denied earlier. Where does this go, Susan?
Well, we know from the unified conclusion of our intelligence agencies that there was Russian meddling in our election, and it was designed to elect Donald Trump and defeat Hillary Clinton. But what we don't know is what role, if any, the Trump campaign was playing, how knowledgeable they were about what was going on, or whether they played any part in it. And one of the things that you find when you start an investigation like this is that you do not know where it's going to end up. So just in the past 24 hours, mm-hmm. we learned about, or 36 hours, we learned about Jeff Sessions' meeting. We learned that two other Trump campaign advisors, J.D. Gordon and Carter Page, no relation to me, also met with Russian officials. While the FBI investigation has been going on for some time, it is just the beginning of the more political investigation by Congress and others into exactly what happened and when. And I totally agree with Jeff that this is not going to be done soon. This is going to be months and months of investigation, and it is impossible to predict at this point where you're going to be in 6 months.
I mean, let's listen to Paul Ryan yesterday saying, look, there's not really evidence of anybody in the Trump campaign involved in collusion here.
The House intelligence community just finished coming up with its oversight plan to continue investigations. We will always make sure that we are protecting our sources and methods and getting to the bottom of any of these things. But we have seen no evidence, been presented with no evidence that anybody on the Trump campaign or an American was involved, including with the Russians.
Susan Page, what's your level of confidence that Republicans, who, of course, chair these committees now in the House and the Senate, will go aggressively after this investigation? He's already saying, well, I don't see evidence.
Well, he's saying that the Congress hasn't seen evidence, but members of Congress, including Adam Schiff, the California Democrat, who is the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, are complaining that the FBI is not telling them much, that they don't have the information the FBI has. So I'm sure Speaker Ryan is telling the truth that they haven't seen evidence of collusion. But first of all, they don't know what evidence has been gathered in toto by the FBI, and they don't know what evidence is going to be gathered in the future, which is why we have investigations. When it comes to whether Republicans will aggressively pursue this, well, we'll see. But so far, the disclosures have come not from congressional committees. They've come from reporters, from news organizations disclosing them. And I'll tell you, that is not going to stop.
Jeff Pegues, there have been calls for a special prosecutor here that would be independent to go after this. Where does that stand? Do you see any likelihood of that happening?
It could happen. The way this story is unfolding right now, that could be what happens next. But we'll just have to see. For right now, some of that talk perhaps has died down because you have Jeff Sessions recusing himself. But there are still a lot of people on the Hill, Democrats specifically, who are calling for a special prosecutor at this point. So this is the next step, I think, in this case.
I should say that Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, House Intelligence Committee, will be with us on this show on Monday. Jack Beatty, we've got Donald Trump, the president, saying this is a witch hunt. We've got Foreign Minister Lavrov of Russia also calling it a total witch hunt. Both of them using this phrase, witch hunt. Lavrov going on to say this is the new McCarthyism, this pursuit of all this. What do you see unfolding here, Jack?
Well, isn't that an Alice in Wonderland turn of events? The Russians saying it's McCarthyism. You know, I think the quote of the week is from Chuck Schumer. They only do the right thing, speaking of the administration, when they're caught doing the wrong thing. Sessions was accompanied by three staffers at these meetings, or at least four people knew about it. But for 7 weeks, he didn't correct his testimony. He only corrected it when he was caught doing the wrong thing. And that's the same pattern we saw with General Flynn. I think it was the interval was 3 weeks that the president left General Flynn, knowing General Flynn had lied to the vice president, left him there, and knowing and having been warned that General Flynn was liable to blackmail by Russia, he left him in place and only fired him when the press, when it was exposed that he had done the wrong thing. This is a very disturbing pattern.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news with Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief of USA Today, Jeff Pagés, Justice and Homeland Security Correspondent for CBS News, author of the forthcoming Black and Blue. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. What do you see in all the news of this week and for months now? Troubling Russian fingerprints? A witch hunt? What did you think of the president's speech this week? Can Republicans figure out a way forward on health care? Callers on the Russia front, Terry in Brewstertown, Tennessee. Terry, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom, and your guest. We've already found at least three witches, plus sounds like at least three more, and all those people are unfit for public office above trash pickup officer. How much more hypocrisy are the people that back Trump going to put up with and continue to support?
Terry, we got the view, and we got it loud and clear. Let me get one more right here. Gabe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Gabe, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. So there's a lot of questions, obviously, to be asked, but one that's sticking out to me is, why is it specifically that Sessions and Flynn thought they could get away with lying? You know, did they think that someone was going to protect them, some entity? And that has me concerned that this seems to be going in the direction of, something rotten in the FBI. Whether or not they're investigating now, we don't know. The way, the FBI director acted, during the campaign, those really, suspicious and unusual attacks on Hillary Clinton. It all kind of fits in with this greater narrative. And, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy at all. I don't watch cable. Yep. I don't, get my news from, Facebook or anything like that.
Yep.
I listen to some NPR. But these facts, they really seem to be going in that direction. And I think that's one reason for all the leaks. It's not just anti-Trump. It's because either other factions in the FBI or the CIA know there's something wrong over at the FBI.
Gabe, we've got the view. There's Terry in Tennessee saying we're already finding witches here, Jeff Pagés. And you hear Gabe's concern there. I mean, how are Americans supposed to watch this and gauge, who's upright here? Who's playing it totally straight? The president says witch hunt. The intelligence community says there's already evidence. Of course, news this week that the Obama administration had spread intelligence around. The way it was presented was to safeguard it so it couldn't be squelched by the incoming Trump administration. But might there be out there, Jeff, some kind of, is there a smoking gun that would be so clear and irrefutable that this wouldn't be a political issue of debate, but rather a matter of fact?
Well, that's a good question. But let me start my answer this way. Imagine if a year ago from today,
okay,
someone had said, well, a year from now, Donald Trump will be president. We'll be investigating Russian meddling in our election. You'd look at me and say, that is crazy. That is so bizarre. There's no way that's going to happen. So much has happened in this country over the last year. Part of that is the degrading of authority in that there have been these statements made about judges, about the media, about Congress. Comey has been wrapped up in that. The FBI, the intel community. So there has been this developing lack of trust with these institutions that really hold this democracy together. And that's why you have some of the questions that we're getting now about the credibility of this investigation. But this is a remarkable time in our history because of what happened. If you take the word Democrat and Republican out of this investigation, what are you left with? You're left with the fact that the Russian government meddled in our democracy. That's remarkable. That is remarkable. The problem is, around that, you had the investigation into Hillary Clinton's private email server and the way that was handled, which then cast doubt on James Comey, who's now leading this investigation. So you have so many different factors at play. And by the way, this is what the Russians set out to do. This is what they have done in Ukraine, according to our intelligence sources, according to my research. They use cyber attacks to create information warfare, false narratives, and then weaponize the information against people that they are against, candidates that they are against.
Confusion, undercut confidence.
Oh, yeah. This is the playbook. This is what they do. And it looks like it worked here in this country. And then in some ways, it's still at play here. You talk about the term witch hunt and how that's now being thrown around. Not only are you hearing it from people here in the U.S., but you're also hearing it from Russian government officials. So there are some bizarre narratives underway, but a lot of this is what the Russians have done in Ukraine, other parts of the world, the U.S. Some people in law enforcement in the U.S. and in the intelligence community are concerned that they're going to do the same thing in Europe with the elections there.
Yep.
So this is the way they carry out their type of warfare. It is information warfare. And in a lot of ways, it has worked.
Remaining to be seen exactly how the U.S. will respond. Ross in Haines City, Florida. Ross, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Just two quick points. One
yeah.
was that the nature of the contacts between the Attorney General and the Russians, one was a keynote speech. You know, nobody's even talking about the nature of these contacts.
Well, they met at the Republican National Convention. Then there was another meeting in Senator Sessions' office in Washington. He says it was all just regular business. I mean, that's his claim, of course, Ross.
Sure. But we noticed that when Attorney General Lynch met with Bill Clinton in the airplane during the investigation about the breach of classified information, nobody was talking about her recusing herself, much less resigning.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say nobody was talking about it. I mean, there was quite an uproar over that. On the other hand, it didn't have this factor of Russian intervention attached to it. But all right, fair enough. Susan Page, is there a fair parallel there? And what about at this point, the uprightness of the FBI? Is it politicized or straight?
You know, I'd love to go back to that question, the one that, mm-hmm. that Gabe raised about whether there's some kind of conspiracy or problem with the FBI. And that is to say that I think this whole controversy has given us a new appreciation of the checks and balances in the American system. Mm. Because, you know, let's say maybe if there was a problem in the FBI, and I don't know that there is, but say the Justice Department, the FBI, wasn't going to pursue this aggressively. You've also got Congress and its investigative committees having a role. You've got the American news media pursuing this aggressively. And you also have the federal bureaucracy that is showing its power with some of the leaks that we've seen, when there's been information that that bureaucrats have felt needed to come out, or officials from the previous administration and officials in this administration. they have leaked that information. And all that, sometimes it's messy, but all that is part of our system of making sure that there can't be one part of government that hijacks an investigation like this.
But in the end, you've got to have either law enforcement or the congressional committees to do something formal here.
No, at the end, you need the American people to say you have to do something. And I think that's what we've seen in the past. That's what we saw, I think, in the Watergate affair. You know, Republicans in Congress acted to force President Nixon to make it clear to him that he needed to resign. So in the end, I think I really believe that the power of Americans to look at what's happening and judge it in a fair way is the ultimate check.
Jack, do you see that sort of system, the full system still working here in a way that should bring us to a true and proper conclusion?
I'm troubled by the news of last weekend that the White House reached out to the chairs, Republican chairs of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, and asked them to knock down a story in the New York Times that connected, that asserted connections between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. So the Times, I think, may have misstated it, or at least gone beyond the known by saying Russian intelligence officials. In any case, Russians. And at least Richard Burr, the chair of the Senate committee, did call some reporters on that. Mark Warner, the ranking Democrat on that committee, I saw an interview with him in which he was incredulous that the White House, in the midst of this investigation that Warner says is bipartisan, we're trying to keep it on the upright, should interfere in that way by calling the chairman and having him try to rebut. So that's a very disturbing move there, a kind of partisan ditching, or at least slowing, of the investigation. Second, on the FBI, Adam Schiff last night said, here's one of the problems with the FBI, and this may get to Gabe's issue. They see everything in law enforcement terms. It's all about, you know, can we get an indictment? Thus, for 7 weeks or whatever it was, they didn't tell Congress, they didn't tell the Senate Judiciary Committee, that Sessions had lied to them about the connection with the Russian ambassador. They didn't tell them that. Why? It wasn't a law enforcement issue. And he says that produces the impression that the FBI is hiding something when really they may be just, you know, looking at things in their narrow, proper scope, but not looking at the health of the republic.
More to come on this front. I want to turn to the president's speech to a joint session of Congress, his first in that capacity. And everybody talked about the tone of it. Of course, the substance is still there. But he was saying, let's work together to solve problems. Here was President Trump that night before Congress.
Everything that is broken in our country can be fixed. Every problem can be solved. And every hurting family can find healing and hope. Our citizens deserve this and so much more. So why not join forces and finally get the job done and get it done right?
Susan Page, what did you see and hear in the president's speech to Congress this week?
You know, he did have a somewhat milder tone than he had, say, in his inaugural address, which was so darker in his speech to CPAC just a few days earlier. But the content of the speech was quite consistent with what he said in those previous speeches. It is a different kind of Republican Party. It is a nationalist and populist message. It's one that calls for building a wall at the southern border, tightening immigration laws, cutting back on free trade deals. So I guess I was less struck by the fact that he didn't call the news media the enemy of the American people, as he'd done at CPAC, and more struck by the fact that he has pursued extremely consistent policies from the time he first announced his presidential bid.
Does he own the GOP now? Will it follow him? Isn't that part of the reason you go to Capitol Hill? I mean, they're the majority in both houses. Are they behind him? Are they with him?
You know, Donald Trump is now the face of the Republican Party. There's no question about that. But he is at odds with many of the Republicans he was addressing in the House chamber on some big issues. You know, the traditional Republican position for decades has been fiscal discipline. We didn't hear much about that. It's been a muscular, hawkish foreign policy. We didn't hear much about that. And it's been conservative social issues. Now, he didn't advocate liberal. And free trade. He didn't. So on all those fronts, he was signaling a big turn in one of our major parties.
Jack Beatty, what did you hear in the president's address this week?
Well, the tone was new. As someone said, it was nationalism in an indoor voice. But it was typical in two respects. One, it was wild. There were wild inaccuracies in it. The Washington Post speaks of numerous. They document 13 claims that were not so. And this is part of a larger picture. The Post has documented 187 false or misleading claims in Trump's first 41 days. That's an average of four a day. So this speech had inaccuracies in it to stop there. The second element that's very typical of the Trump speech is it focused on exceptions. Take the ACA, Obamacare. He cited Arizona. Premiums have doubled. In fact, the national average of increase in Obamacare premiums this year is 25%, and that's before subsidies. He focused on the danger of radicalized immigrants entering the country. In fact, a Homeland Security assessment leaked to MSNBC says that foreign-born extremists, foreign-born people entering the country, are not typically radicalized. They become radicalized after they're here. So vetting wouldn't really deal with their question. He focused on violent crime committed by undocumented immigrants, and he proposed a sort of federal bureau of bad dudes to publicize these crimes. Well, in fact, to quote from one study, it's significantly less likely that native-born Americans, it's significantly less likely that foreign-born, that immigrants are apt to commit more crimes than native-born Americans. So what does this focus on the exception mean? Well, it disturbed me this week because I'm steadily reading Hannah Arendt and others on how nations fall down into authoritarianism, how that can happen. And I come across this in Timothy Snyder's invaluable pamphlet called On Tyranny. He writes, "The most intelligent of the Nazis, the legal theorist Carl Schmitt, explained in clear language the essence of fascist government. The way to destroy all rules, he said, was to focus on the idea of the exception. That typically, in their campaigning, the Nazis, as in Italy, the fascists, focused on the exception and made people believe that the exception, which always paints a darker picture, was in fact the norm, and used that as a justification for radical measures that essentially shut down, as Snyder says, real freedom for fake safety."
Lots of people looking at tone, looking at substance, and making their own judgments. I mean, Jeff Pagaz, Dow 21,000 this week. Does that mean that somebody out there thinks there's a formula for success in this, economic success for somebody in this president's approach?
I think Wall Street is loving what they're hearing, and I think that is reflected in numbers, certainly. But clearly, this was a president who wanted to provide a reset for his image, how he's perceived by the American people. And really, you saw that right off the bat with that speech where he gave his, the first few sentences there, he gave a salute to Black History Month, denounced hate crimes, something that a lot of people thought that took too long for him to do. So this was, in his view, clearly an opportunity to reset how the American people see him. It seemed to work for about 24 hours, but then the Jeff Sessions controversy came up, and then we saw more statements from the White House suggesting that this was all politically motivated.
Hi, it's Tom. Thanks for listening to this On Point podcast. I want you to take a moment to think about the people you care about. Have they ever listened to a podcast? All this month, we're asking our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. This one? Another one? Do it in real life or on social media, and if they don't know how to download them, give them a quick lesson. You'll be opening up a new world for them. Tell us what you're recommending with the hashtag tripod. That's hashtag TRYpod. And thanks. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, on Bloomberg TV, billionaire talk show host David Rubenstein asked Oprah Winfrey if she would ever run for president.
Never considered the question, even a possibility. I just thought, oh,
Right, because it's clear that you don't need government experience to be elected president of the United
States. That's what I thought.
Right? The Oprah factor right there. On Late Night with Stephen Colbert, the comedian joked about former President Obama's record-breaking book deal.
He's out of work right now, but I think he's going to be okay. Because he and Michelle Obama just signed a $60 million book deal, okay? Which explains why he could afford Richard Branson as his kite surfing instructor.
$60 million. And late night host James Corden recreated Emma Stone's La La Land movie audition scene, breaking into song about the botched Oscars Best Picture announcement.
Was this a mix-up? A conspiracy? A fix-up? Or was Warren Beatty just blind? Here's to the ones who lose. God, I need so much booze.
I'm sure somebody did. We're looking at a week in the news. Jeff Sessions and Russia, Trump and Congress, healthcare tangle, the Republicans wrestling with that. What about Republicans and healthcare? Will they figure it out? Are you still agog at the Oscar Best Picture blooper? Are you agog at the Obama's $60 million book deal? Wow. Jeff Pagaz is with us from CBS News. Susan Page from USA Today. Jack Beatty is here. The president talked about healthcare in his speech to Congress. I want to get into that. It's not easy to repeal and replace. Here was the president Tuesday night.
Reforms that expand choice, increase access, lower costs, and at the same time provide better health care.
Okay, sounds like utopia. Susan Page, where do Republicans stand on trying to find that magic formula?
Well, Republicans are having a lot of trouble finding that magic formula. We heard President Trump say this week that who knew health care was so complicated? Well, everyone who's ever worked on health care knew it was so complicated. Mm. It is not clear. There is not at this moment a consensus Republican plan on what to do after, if and when you repeal the Affordable Care Act. There may be a plan that's coming together in the House, and there's some signs that the House House Speaker Paul Ryan intends to push that through in the next couple weeks in pretty short order. But there's no consensus with the Senate, and there's no sign that there is that this is going to happen soon. And that's important because Republicans, number one, have been talking about repealing it for 6 years or so, and number two, because they really can't move on. They really want to deal with this before they move on to other things like their hopes for a big tax bill.
Is it possible that the Republicans themselves will simply gridlock?
Yes, it's entirely possible. In fact, gridlock has been, of course, our default function in government, especially when you need 60 votes to do most things in the Senate and you only have 52 Republicans there. Now, they can do big elements of the Affordable Care Act repeal using a maneuver called budget reconciliation, which only requires 51 votes.
But that doesn't get a new plan out there, does it?
It doesn't. But it can deal with some of the tax aspects of the bill. It can do some things. But to do anything, you need the House and the Senate to agree on what it is you're trying to do. And so far, Republicans in the House and Senate are not in agreement.
Craig in Onalaska, Wisconsin. Craig, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What struck me as far as President Trump's speech the other evening was the way that he honored the Owen family versus how he disrespected the Kahn family. That really, in my opinion, is something that he needs to apologize for.
I mean, William Ryan Owen, the Navy SEAL who died in Yemen, and of course the very, very long attention given that as the officer's wife, widow, was there in the gallery with the Trump family. That was a lot of attention. And what's the contrast you're drawing, Craig?
Well, he showed a lot of disrespect towards the Kahn family, basically made fun of them.
Khazar Khan, who spoke at the Democratic National Convention, whose son died in Iraq.
Yeah, both died in combat, both died in service to their country, and both are due equal respect. And I think President Trump needs to apologize for his disrespect towards the Kahn family. There is no reason that he should disrespect the Kahn family in any way. There's Democrats in the service, there's Republicans in the service, there's independents, there's people of all different religions. We all serve.
Yep.
I spent 20 years in the military,
yep.
And I worked with many people of different faiths and beliefs. We worked as a team, and I think he needs to apologize.
Craig, we take the point. Of course, the president appeared to be going for another point in his speech to Congress. And it was about that raid itself, which had been heavily criticized as being botched. The Navy SEAL's father had come out very critically of the Trump administration and the White House on how they had handled it. He came right out quoting the Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, General Mattis, to assert that the Yemen raid, in his speech to Congress, had been worthwhile.
I just spoke to our great General Mattis just now, who reconfirmed that, and I quote, Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemy.
Jeff Begay, you cover Justice, Homeland Security. I mean, did the president have to twist General Mattis's arm to get that statement to read before Congress? We've had so many reports coming out of the Pentagon that this was not a successful raid. What's the truth here?
Well, we know that the White House has been pushing back against those reports. They believe that there was actionable intel gathered from that raid. In fact, they've been carrying out more operations in Yemen in the wake of it.
Bombing just the last 24 hours.
That's correct. And so they believe that there was good intelligence gathered from that raid.
But just because they bombed doesn't mean it was good intelligence. I mean, we're just trying to figure out what's political theater and what's real here. Do we know?
Well, sometimes it's hard to tell. But I think what is clear is that the White House sees Yemen as an important place for them to certainly increase their presence there because there are remnants of al-Qaeda there that pose a threat to the West. That is clear from intelligence officials that we've spoken to. And so there appears to be an effort to really intensify the focus on Yemen.
President determined to make that point. Sarah in Brooklyn, New York. Sarah, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I am calling because I just wanted to mention something that I don't hear anyone else talking about, and that is that it feels like the president has no plan for my generation, which is like the millennials.
Mm-hmm.
And it's everything that he's trying to appeal to is like, sure, it's great that like our parents can have coal mining jobs again. I mean, we don't love that, you know, but but what is going to happen with the things that we want to do? I feel like we don't have a seat at the table.
What do you want to hear him talking about that you don't think he is?
Well, let me tell you something. Like, I work in technology in New York in a tech company, and we have Republicans, too, here that come from other states.
Sure.
We kind of have a consensus just because we're millennials. We're the same generation.
Yep.
We want to talk about the environment. We are going to have to deal with the consequences of all of his policies. We're the real consequence barriers, and we just don't have a seat at the table. Baby boomers are, like, it's just, you know, they still have, like, a grip on everything. And I just feel like we need to start like a super PAC or something to get all the baby boomers out.
Sarah, I mean, but the president says he wants this gleaming future, all new infrastructure, a gleaming American future. That would be for millennials, I guess, Sarah.
No, not the way that the kind of stuff that he's talking about.
Yeah.
It's not technologically advanced. He's talking about tunnels and bridges.
And coal.
He's trying to cut down on driving.
Yeah. Sarah, I really appreciate your call. Millennial power there, the flag raised from Brooklyn. I mean, Susan Page, we saw these interesting headlines this week. Sarah goes to environmental issues and reporting from out of the White House that Steve Bannon is pushing to take the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement, the big agreement that was supposed to get us on track not to feel the worst effects of climate change, but that you've got Rex Tillerson, former head of Exxon, for heaven's sakes, and Ivanka Trump pushing back on that. What do we know about where that stands and what might actually emerge, Susan?
Well, we know that President Trump has not followed through on his campaign promise to pull out of that agreement. And that's been interesting because he's followed through on a series of other campaign promises, including some controversy ones.
Yep.
But let me just congratulate Sarah on her perception, because if you want to look at the war between baby boomers and millennials, look at the budget priorities that President Trump outlined on Monday. He said he wasn't going to touch Medicare and Social Security. Those are the biggest drivers of the federal budget, the biggest drivers of the expanding federal deficit. And those are programs that, of course, help people who are older, help baby boomers. And he's going to cut in big ways programs like not just environmental programs, although they're included, but also education programs and child care programs and school lunch programs. And these are programs that, of course, help millennials and younger people. There is a big age divide, and it fits with the divide among his own supporters, because President Trump's supporters, his supporters were disproportionately older. He did not do nearly as well among millennials.
But is Paul Ryan going to roll over on that? I mean, this has been his big point all along. You've got to look at these entitlements. Is he just going to roll with the Trump view on this?
It's been a crusade for Paul Ryan. But you know what? You cannot reform entitlements like Social Security and Medicare, which is a politically very tough thing to do, unless you have the president on your side. That is not a battle Paul Ryan can win on his own.
Of course, as Sarah's calling in from Brooklyn as a millennial on this, you've got the party that didn't win trying to figure out their way forward this week. Newly elected Democratic National Committee Chairman Tom Perez had a joint press conference with his deputy chairman, Congressman Keith Ellison, who many Bernie Sanders supporters wanted to see at the top of that ticket. On Saturday, the two had decided to work together, he said, for the sake of the party's unity.
We understood that in order to move forward, it's imperative to be united. And so we have spoken for some time about how do we bring together unity, whoever wins. And if the tables had been turned, I would have been honored to serve under Congressman Ellison.
Jack Beatty, I'm sure you were watching. This was fairly fraught, and there was very vocal disappointment in the hall when it was Tom Perez. But there he is. What about the opposition party here and how it is tending its wounds and charting its way forward, Jack?
Well, as I understand it, they have yet to perform an autopsy on the Clinton campaign, and that now is a fraught issue. What went wrong, and what can we do to correct it in the future? And remember, the Republicans did an autopsy on the Romney campaign, and they said, "Oh, we've got a change in the direction of more Hispanics, multiculturalism, young people," and they went in 2016
just
in just the opposite direction.
Autopsy, schmautopsy.
Exactly. But the bottom line is the Democrats are now down to looking at state Senate and legislative races in Delaware that go their way and say, look, we're coming back. Mm. Delaware has turned. They're in desperate shape. They haven't been in, I think the figures are, they've never been in such a minority status since the 1920s.
Jeff, I want to ask you about this series of Jewish cemetery desecrations and bomb scare threats called in. We've had an arrest today of a Juan Thompson, 31 years old, was arrested in St. Louis, accused of making at least 8 of the threats against Jewish community centers. And there have been something like 100, well, there have been 100 plus against community centers and Jewish schools. He is also charged with making... arrested in connection with a threat against the Anti-Defamation League in New York, their headquarters last month. We had the head of the ADL here with us just yesterday. Is there an understanding of what's going on with these acts of what appear to be anti-Semitic acts? Does this arrest illuminate what's going on here, Jeff?
Well, maybe just a little bit. We're not sure yet whether he's tied to all of these threats. As you mentioned, this complaint says that they have tied him to 8 of them, and that his actions stem from the breakup of a romantic relationship. There's another bizarre story if you read that criminal complaint, which we're trying to do right now. But the question is he someone who is tied to all of these incidents, or is he a copycat, someone who heard about him and then wanted to get in on the action? So that's what we're trying to figure out right now, because you have all of these incidents happening over the last month and a half or so. As you mentioned, nearly 100 incidents since the beginning of the year. So investigators... I'm sure we'll find out momentarily that investigators have not concluded that he is behind all of them, that they continue their investigation.
And can you tell us, Jeff, what about the story coming out of Baltimore about police there in a kind of elite unit really off the chain here, shaking people down and robbing residents, fabricating court documents? What's going on in Baltimore with the police department there?
Well, these are seven police officers who were charged on racketeering charges. Six of the Baltimore police officers were being held in jail pending their trial. But according to investigators, this was some elite unit. And the allegations are that that they breached the public trust. This was a unit that was trying to get guns off the streets, but instead, according to investigators, they were robbing Baltimore residents, fabricating court documents, and filing fraudulent overtime claims. So this is a case in a city that has had a history, a troubled history, of its police department and how it interacts with the community. Over the last couple of years, they've tried to bring in and make reforms there, but this is obviously another black eye for that department.
Last thing that Baltimore needs right there. Susan Page, how do you see the politics in Washington turning this week? Do we get soon toward, I don't know, legislative action in Congress where it's less about White House turmoil and more about what this administration and its Republicans on Capitol Hill are really going to do?
Well, I think the voters would be delighted to hear that we were going to move on, but I am, I guess, not an optimist that we're going to see anything different next week than we saw this week, and what a week it was.
I would say, how many of these in a row can the country take? Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief with USA Today. Susan, thank you very much for being with us today. Wonderful to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
Jeff Pagaz, Justice and Homeland Security Correspondent for CBS News, author of the forthcoming Black and Blue, Inside the Divide Between the Police and Black America. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Jack Beatty, great as always to have you with us.
Thank you.
Adam Schiff joins us on Monday. Be there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.